Hog was in class. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. I am the origin of everything. Everything includes Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu even. Everything has its origin in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This we don't mind. Nope.
Can only chant Hare Krishna. Is it Bhagavad Gita chanting Hare Krishna?
Yeah, chanting Hare Krishna is also chanting Hare Krishna.
Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita
Krishna is the origin of everything, Sarvasya, the origin of the demigods, the origin of all other expansions of God, the origin of the material world, the origin of everything. And Mata Sarvam Pravartate, as we discussed this morning, just reverses the order. I'm the origin of everything, everything comes from me. So it's a way of stating things emphatically. Neat rhetorical device. Iti matva, knowing this, bhajante imam. Those who know this engage in devotional service. Buddha, bhava samanvita. The learned persons who know this, intelligent persons, buddha. Bhava samanvita. Srila Prabhupada glosses that as being with great attention. Bhava also means ecstasy. Then Srila Prabhupada gives extensive evidence in this purport that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He quotes from the Gopaltapani Upanishad, Narayana Upanishad, from the Vedas, again Narayana Upanishad, Maha Upanishad, Moksha Dharma, Varaha Purana, all pointing to the same conclusion that that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any questions?
If the spiritual world is eternal, how can Krishna be the source of it?
We've discussed the sun and the sunshine. The sun is the origin, the sunshine is the emanation. Some other questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do the Mayavadis have a typical...
I don't know what they say to get out of these things. They have a hard time with Bhagavad Gita, actually. I saw some comment by a scholar, university scholar, where basically he was saying, that the Advaitins really have to jump through hoops to try to get their Advaitic conclusion out of Bhagavad Gita, because it's naturally a Vaishnava text. be really taken on its face, taken straightforwardly. It's teaching devotional service to Krishna. So they have to try to explain it away somehow or other, but it's really straightforward.
Is that one thing they may say, that, oh, it's just a Vaishnava text?
Yeah, but they do that at great risk to their popularity, since everybody accepts Bhagavad Gita. So just to try to watch, it's something like, you know, in America, you say, oh, the Constitution, oh, that's just a piece of paper. You know, Declaration of Independence, that doesn't mean much. You know, for a politician to say that is like outrageous. So for a Hindu to say, you know, well, Bhagavad Gita, and there are those who don't accept Bhagavad Gita. Those who, have you seen this publication, Hinduism Today?
Yes.
You've seen it. There's started by this, really by, although they want to be like for all Hindus, it started by this adherent of Shaivism. And although they don't put it in banner headlines, their position is that Bhagavad Gita is not really acceptable. Because it's not part, basically because it teaches Krishna consciousness. But, you know, it's not part of the original Vedas. It's written by human beings rather than being spiritually, rather than being Shruti. And because it teaches violence, which the person didn't find acceptable. You know, so they're like, and those same people, they chide us because we don't, you know, we're like ambivalent about being Hindus. Whereas they come straight out and say they're Hindus, but they reject Bhagavad Gita. Oddly enough, if you ever meet one of them and need to, or ever need to have something to say, there you are.
Hawaii.
Yeah, the guys in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice people, you know, whatever it is, but they ultimately they reject Bhagavad Gita. It's their Guruji, who's now late, passed on, but he directly rejected Bhagavad Gita on these two counts. It certainly doesn't support Shaiva Siddhanta. Yes.
Sankaracharya, he wrote a commentary, and Sankaracharya is considered like the father of...
Well, basically what these people say is that it's accepted by the Smartas and by the Vaishnavas, but not by us, the Shaivas. They count Sankaracharya as among the Smartas, Sampada. So that's their take on it. But they kind of low-key that. They keep it low-key because it wouldn't win a lot of brownie points with their readers. Yes?
What would be then the way to establish the Bhagavad Gita as
Well, the Jiva Goswami quotes that according to Chandogya Upanishad, the Puranas and Mahabharata are accepted as the fifth Veda.
According to?
I believe it's Chandogya Upanishad.
Yes.
Yeah?
So,
excuse me?
And
Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata. And there are several other quotations Shiva Goswami gives to the same effect, that the, you know, you say, well, we only accept the Shruti. Well, Shruti accepts the Puranas and the Mahabharata. So, well, if you accept Shruti, you have to accept what they say. So they endorse the Puranas and Mahabharata. There you are. And it's accepted by all the great acharyas. Ramanuja acharya is accepted, Shankara acharya is accepted, Madhva acharya is accepted. So that way also. Yes?
What means this prefix pra? Prabhava,
prava. Pra usually means, it means different things, but lots of times it means intensively. It can have other meanings also. No, it's not complete.
Sufficiently. Pradushyanti.
Pramatmani. Sufficiently.
Yeah. It can mean intensely. It has other meanings also. I'd have to pull my dictionary and see. All right, any other questions? Okay. These are actually very important verses that Prabhupada's quoting. They're foundational verses, especially from the Vedas, that we don't quote all the time, but which do establish the notion of confusion. Machchita madgata prana bodhyanta parasparam katyantas jamam nityam tushanticha namanticha. This, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives the analogy from Chaitanya Charitamrita of devotional service being like a seed that grows and gives fruits and flowers in the spiritual world. Very beautiful example. How the devotee becomes comes to the point where he can't live even for a moment without being in contact with the Supreme Lord, just as a fish cannot live without water. Well, this is the goal, to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Much chitta means minds fully engaged in Krishna. And madgata prana means their lives are devoted to the Lord. The Krishna is their heart and soul. And katyantascha, bodhyanta parasparam, enlightening one another. Prabhupada gives the example someplace that scientists have their conferences and their learned journals and so on, where they enlighten one another about their discoveries. You know, we've found another moon of Pluto or something, and they publish it in their journal, and then the other scientists get excited and say, wow, you know, there's a new astronomical body out there, and then they start researching it and they publish their findings, and that's how their science goes on. So Prabhupada says similarly, the devotees are always busy researching Krishna consciousness or discussing different topics about Krishna and enlightening one another, encouraging one another by spiritual topics of Krishna. This is actually devotee association. Devotee association doesn't mean just hanging out with devotees at the Lassi stand or, you know, near the Dabwala and talking for japa. It means serving together. It means enlightening one another about Krishna, reminding one another about Krishna, chanting with other devotees about Krishna. Katyanchas jamam nityam. Always talking about Krishna. And tushyanti nityam. Nityam means always. Nityam also means regularly. Just as we have the regular Bhagavatam class, we have regular Sankirtan and regular programs. So that we're in the initial stage, you know, we may not be so attached to hearing and chanting. So then we have regular programs, regularly scheduled programs. The pure devotees on the highest platform, they don't need any regularly scheduled programs. They're always talking about Krishna, always chanting about Krishna. Krishna Kirtanagana. But even they attend the regular programs. But beyond that, they're spontaneously attached. Why? Tushyanti charamanticha. They take great satisfaction and pleasure in chanting about Krishna.
There's some information in the tradition about this tushyanti charamanticha, like dealing with
satisfaction and bliss?
One is
the difference between one and the other?
I mean, one is experienced by the, you know,
yeah, there's a thing about that. Okay, let's take a look. 10. He just says the meaning of satisfaction and enjoyment. First he says, the devotees glorify me by narrating about my form, qualities, and pastimes. Since smaran, machchitta, shravana, bodhyanta, and kirtan, katyanta, are best among all types of bhakti. They've been specifically mentioned. Thus, these devotees are satisfied and enjoy. This is private or internal experience. Or, then he gives another meaning. Or, satisfaction and enjoyment can be as follows. They are satisfied even at the stage of sadhana by continual performance of their worship, brought about by good fortune, and they take pleasure in thinking of their future attainment of prema and enjoy with their Lord through the mind. This indicates Radha Nuga Bhakti. Okay. Yes?
It says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Dwell means...
Live
in me. But it says...
It's just poetic language, actually. Much chitta means me-minded. That's literally what it means, me-minded, Krishna-minded.
So he's thinking what we are thinking?
Hmm?
So what does that mean? I don't understand.
What me-minded means?
No, what is dwelling?
Dwell? It's just poetic language.
No, not literally.
I
mean, what is it, you know, like, he's thinking when I'm thinking something and he's...
Just like if you're thinking about a girl. You know, just can't get her out of my mind, you know. Just wow, this girl is, you know, and I mean, wow, and this and that. You know. That's girl-minded, you know. He's just always thinking, or it could be, you know, five different girls. Well, Susie is this, but Julie is that, and Barbara is this, and, you know. That's girl-minded. You know, he's always, as soon as he stops thinking of one, he starts thinking about the other one. You know, that's what he's got in his head all, you know, he's just like, girls on the mind.
But he's saying that the thoughts of my devotees dwell in me.
Yeah, instead of being girl-minded, they're Krishna-minded. Just as devotees of girls are always thinking of girls, devotee of Krishna is always thinking of Krishna.
But isn't he saying that Krishna always thinks of his devotees?
No.
So I didn't understand. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me.
Yeah, just dump the fancy language. It's just a poetic way of saying, you know, if your thoughts dwell on Susie, it means you're always thinking of her.
Right, I understand.
So they're always thinking of Krishna. Poor Susie, she's out of the picture. She got ditched for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the breaks. Much chitta, they're always thinking of Krishna.
This first sentence, that the thoughts of my devotees dwell in me. Means Krishna is always thinking about
it. Not what it says, it's just grammatically not what it says. It's not Krishna dwells, it's the thoughts that are dwelling on Krishna.
On me, it sounds more...
It's just another way of saying
well,
the pure devotee's mind dwells in Krishna.
Yeah, it's fancy poetic language. I don't know if it's Prabhupada's fancy poetic language. I have a sneaking suspicion that this is picked up from some other edition, although I don't know. But either way, wherever it came from, it means that the devotee's thoughts are really... It means much-chitta. Much-chitta means me-minded. Mut means... This is a particular kind of Sanskrit... compound, samas. Samas means how you put words together and make compounds out of them.
Sandhi?
No, sandhi is how they sound together.
Okay.
But like if you say Krishna-minded, that's the way of taking Krishna and mind, putting the two words together and say Krishna-minded. Okay. And mind is a noun and Krishna is a noun. And you put two nouns together in a certain way, you get an adjective, Krishna-minded. So that's a certain kind of compound. And it's there in Sanskrit also. or Sanskrit to begin with. Bahuvrihi compound, maybe? Anyway. It means much chitta. Me-minded, Krishna-minded.
He says something of compound, to the dual compound, somebody in the Gita.
Yeah, dvandva. Dvandva samasi kasya cha. Dvandva means two things together, like Krishna Balaram together. That's dvandva samas. Two together, Krishna and Balaram. Whereas here it's put together a different way. There's Bahuvrihi compounds, Tatpurusha compounds, anyway, it's Sanskrit grammar. It's not my forte anyway.
How did the translations of Bhagavad Gita come about?
Prabhupada wrote some, and some the editor pulled or enhanced from other printed editions with Prabhupada's permission. And Barb Friedrich.
Did Prabhupada check everything?
Checked everything? To some extent.
And when he gave classes?
Mostly when he gave classes. He also read the abridged edition, went through the galley proofs. He didn't look at the proofs of, I shouldn't say that, he didn't spend much time, it seems, on the proofs for the second, for the unabridged edition. But anyway, he knew what was in the book, and generally approved, but there's, you can be sure that there's some things that he didn't approve, even if they're in the book. Planet of the Trees, which we'll come upon in this chapter. Unlikely that it had Prabhupada's, you know, stamp of approval.
But one realization is that all Srila Prabhupada's purpose, every sentence, and if anybody else tries to translate this or make a sentence, every sentence is unique.
Yeah, Prabhupada's.
It's rare, like,
and that's where the real essence is in the purports. Prabhupada said that in editing the books, he said the translations you can, you know, work with a little bit. He said, but the purports, you know, they're my emotional ecstasy. Otherwise, the translators, they get the translation more or less right. But then they write, it's not to Krishna that we have to surrender, it's something else. Anything else? Mm-hmm.
If I understood correctly, until 6th chapter, Srila Prabhupada personally wrote.
Yeah, it seems that the manuscripts we have up through about chapter 6 were typed personally by Prabhupada. And after that, he begins dictation.
He was dictating from the dictation. And some other devotees put on the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to be how it went. Okay, shall we move ahead? Yeah, Garga Muni Prabhu bought Prabhupada a dictaphone, and from then on, Prabhupada was dictating. Tesham satatajuktanam pajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. Tesham satata yuktana. Satata yukta means always engaged in Krishna's service. Never idle, never doing some other business. Always engaged in Krishna consciousness. Bhajatam, rendering devotional service. Priti purvakam, with devotion and love. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. To such devotees, I give spiritual intelligence. What does Prabhupada say? Real intelligence, spiritual intelligence. Yena, by which, mam upayanti te, they come to me. And Prabhupada comments that even if one has a bona fide spiritual master and he's attached to a spiritual organization, he may not quite have the intelligence to make progress, but if he engages seriously in Krishna's service, Krishna gives him the intelligence. Krishna from within gives instructions so that the devotee can make progress. devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of spiritual realization, self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately to attain him. Prabhupada does mention the importance of the spiritual master. The ultimate goal is Krishna. People don't know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. He also mentions the different yogas. Karma with bhakti added is karma yoga. Jnana with Krishna consciousness added is jnana yoga. But bhakti yoga is pure devotional service. There's something I was thinking of. Oh, we were studying in earlier chapters how if someone wants to worship a demigod, it's Krishna who gives him the faith to worship the demigod. The demigod can't actually do that. It's Krishna from within the heart who does that. Now, here we find that if someone worships Krishna, then Krishna himself gives the intelligence. If you want the intelligence to worship some demigod, Krishna will give you that. But if you want the guidance by which to come to him, then Krishna from within the heart will give the necessary guidance.
I had an interesting discussion with a devotee who is based in Bangalore, and he has a lot of association with Madhvas and Sri Vaishnavas. And you say they emphasize so much on knowledge. Without knowledge, you cannot bhakti or something. And I was just saying that, no, I mean, bhakti isn't dependent, bhakti itself isn't dependent on knowledge. It's, by doing bhakti, you can get knowledge.
We were hearing that in the Bhagavatam today, wasn't it? That in the beginning, knowledge is a requisite, but ultimately, or maybe considered a requisite, but ultimately, pure devotional service is the thing. But because people don't, due to a poor fund of knowledge, people don't know that the goal is Krishna. They don't understand Krishna. They're enchanted by something else. So they require sufficient knowledge. But it's not by becoming a learned scholar. There's so many learned scholars, but what's the use? There's so much evidence in Srimad Bhagavatam especially, that even if you're a great learned scholar, if you're not Krishna conscious, then it's useless. It's a useless waste of time. And we had the example yesterday of the Yajnik Brahmins. He's useless. And there are so many scholars. But we shouldn't underestimate the importance of hearing from Shastra. Otherwise, why did Prabhupada give so many books? If knowledge is useless, why so many books to give us knowledge? So it's not sentimental. You run into these... There's this knockoff of ISKCON called the International Society for something else. And I met one of their people, and she was saying, Swamiji says we don't need books. We just need to love Radha and Krishna. You know? But that's sahaja. Simply ditch the books and absorb yourself in Krishna praying. That's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's method. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. He's teaching detachment and knowledge and devotional service. Actually, from devotional service, you'll get the detachment and knowledge. Then you get the Ashu Vairagya, Jnanam Cha.
Also, there's Satiti Panipati, no? By doing that service, you kind of knowledge to you.
But we shouldn't discount this knowledge. At the same time, we shouldn't think. Therefore, Krishna says, I'm giving you this knowledge by which you'll be, what is the result of this knowledge? You'll be enlivened in devotional service. If you don't have knowledge, if you don't know who Krishna is, if you don't know what his energies are, if you don't know much about Krishna, how will you be inspired to serve Krishna? But when you get knowledge of Krishna, not by exactly intellectual study, but by hearing from authorities, we discussed Rukmini the other day, and how she heard from Narada, and you get enlightened, and Krishna says, we just read that a few verses ago. Etam vibhuti yogam chama mama yo veti tatvata. One who factually understands these vibhutis that I'm going to talk about in this chapter becomes engaged in unalloyed devotional service. That's the only reason we're interested in knowledge, to be reinstated in devotional service, not to be, you know, walking encyclopedias, big reservoirs of gyan, but this gyan that's favorable for the service of Krishna that we want. Anything else? Yes?
It's this in purport that Jnana Yoga is when one knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in the mental situation.
Yeah.
But Gurjan Prabhupada, he puts in a chart that Jnana Yoga leads to Brahman realization. He said Jnana Yoga is like...
Well, there are different ways of discussing. As you've probably learned by now, Prabhupada defines words differently according to the circumstances. So sometimes karma yoga means basically you're attached to karma, but you have a little covering of bhakti. Sometimes karma yoga means action in Krishna consciousness, pure devotional service. You know, so Prabhupada uses these words, comments on them from different angles of vision. And if we think that these words have only one meaning and there's only, you know, one definition, and that's what it is, you'll get stuck. You'll get confused. Because they are defined different ways and different times and circumstances, different places, different contexts, different commentators, acharyas. And Prabhupada follows sometimes one commentator, sometimes another.
In Burijan's book, it shows Jnana Yoga leads to Brahman realization and up the ladder. It goes two different ways. Yeah. It's according to basically your guru. If you have a mind by the guru, you have a devotee guru.
Okay. Moving on. Yes?
In previous verses, it says that even if you're on a lower birth, you can attain Krishna.
Yes.
Right? So, does that mean that that the source of intelligence is coming from the soul? Or you're born with it, you know, you're born with intelligence?
Well, there's different kinds of intelligence. There's intelligence that comes with this body, practically speaking. You know, someone...
That's lower birth, you can say.
Intelligence?
No, if you got, you know...
If you're dull.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lower birth. You know, a person just doesn't kind of... You know, I just can't really figure things out. You know, it's all beyond me. So that's like, why is it like that? You sit him down in a classroom and he's like, you know, he wants to go out and have a beer, or he just somehow he wants to get out of there because he can't sit and listen to this stuff. You know, some people are just not intellectual at all.
Okay.
And that comes sometimes just from their birth. They're born with certain qualities. Sometimes it also comes from association, where they might have a little bit of intellectual stuff, but it's really been, you know, they've taken so many drugs or had so many beers or hung out with dull people for so long that, you know, their intelligence, whatever they had, is kind of petered out. That happens. You can abuse your faculties in such a way that you blow whatever intelligence you were given to begin with. You know, people, we know the 1960s, there were very intelligent people who simply did not survive the 1960s.
Right.
Yeah, they, you know, they they left no records behind because they were not capable of leaving any records behind. You know, there are a lot of examples of, you know, we saw a lot of people just go that way. They just, they wanted to blow their minds and they did.
Then intelligence to understand Krishna is coming from spiritual...
It's coming from Krishna. Well, even a person who's not very bright can become Krishna conscious, and he becomes brilliant. Not necessarily that he becomes a learned scholar, that he's, you know, acquires a vocabulary of seven-syllable words, or becomes expert in yaya, and, you know, logic or argument. But he becomes more clear-headed than the professors. You know, he says something like, you know, the professor gives a learned disquisition or something, and the guy's already figured out, this guy's just attached to women, you know. He's got the bottom line already ahead, you know, he's a big, big professor, but really all he's saying is, you know, that there's really nothing better than women. And, you know, the guy who's like, he's a truck driver, but he's Krishna conscious, he's figured it out. And the guy who's a big, big scholar, you know, he's an illusion. So the simple devotee becomes more learned, even like a child in Krishna consciousness. He knows more than the big, big scholar. And Prabhupada cited one of his favorite examples was a big, big professor in Russia who Prabhupada met in Moscow. And the man said, Swamiji, when this body is finished, then everything is finished. That means he's a fool. He can't distinguish between consciousness and matter. He can't grasp, can't detect the presence of spirit. And another example, I was there, Prabhupada spoke of it several times. We were walking through a field in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was taking his morning walk. Not just sannyasis and Prabhupada and, you know, other devotees. And a farmer came out, really a simple guy. I mean, you know, one of these people with permanently gray cloth and, you know, calloused hands and, you know, really simple farmer. And offered obeisances, you know, dandavats in front of everyone, and said in Hindi that it's our great fortune that you've come to this field. That actually it's Govinda's field, Krishna's field, and it's our great fortune that you've come here. That means he's better than, you know, so many learned scholars. Although he's a simple farmer, he's come to the conclusion that Krishna's everything, that everything belongs to Krishna. So he's a learned person, not the person who read so many books and has so many degrees and can use so many big words. He's blessed by Krishna. You don't have to be even like Hanuman is a monkey. He's not supposed to be the most philosophically erudite, but he's engaged in the service of Ram, so he gets whatever, all the intelligence he needs from, by the mercy of Lord Ramchandra. Actually, he's very intelligent. Okay?
There's an example from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu, that is prominent.
Yeah.
And was illiterate, but he was actually practicing the conclusion, Mamana Bhavamatvato, so he called him a scholar.
And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're the real scholar. He couldn't read, but just by seeing the picture of Krishna, he was crying. And he was trying to follow the instructions. His spiritual master had said, you read Bhagavad Gita every day. He couldn't read, so he was just going through the pages just to follow the instruction. And he was crying, seeing, oh, Krishna is so kind. He's the charioteer of Arjuna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted you. You're the real scholar. Not these wranglers and, you know, air splitters. Now Krishna further explains, Tesham evanukam partam aham agyanajam tamaha Nashyami Atma Bhavasto Gana Deepena Paspata. How is it that the devotee becomes a greater scholar than the biggest scholar? By Krishna's mercy. Anukampa means compassion, mercy, anukampa, and artam for the sake of showing special mercy. Agana jamtamaha, whatever darkness may be there in his heart because of ignorance, nashyami, I completely destroy it. Atmabhavastha, I'm situated within their hearts. And Gyanadipena, Bhasvata, with the bright lamp of transcendental knowledge, I enlighten them from within. Yes.
Does Krishna use poetry? You know, the translation is from the Sanskrit, but it's like poetic. So does Krishna use, you know, metaphorically?
Yeah, this is all poetic language in Bhagavad Gita is poetry. It's all in verse. It all has meter. There's alliteration in places. There are different rhetorical devices. So it's poetry. Gyana Deepena, that's metaphor. So poetry means there should be metaphor, there should be similes, there should be
analogy
sometimes. There should be alliteration, there should be meter, dissonance, there should be assonance, there should be... So all of these things are there in Bhagavad Gita. The language is very simple, but also poetic. Krishna is called Uttama Shloka. His slokas are very transcendentally perfect. The slokas, verses spoken by Krishna or about Krishna, are the best poetry.
You can say that, you know, if you know he's speaking like this, you know, he must be a person, you know, because if it's so nice for us, you know, you know, it can't be like just God, this powerful block of you know, cloud.
No. Yeah, if there's a poem, there must be a poet, and poet means there's feelings, there's sensibility, there's taste, there's judgment, there's understanding. So many things are there. But Krishna's poetry is Uttama Shloka. Krishna is known as Uttama Shloka. The person who's glorified by the best poetry. His own poetry is glorious, and the poetry about Krishna is glorious.
You mentioned that a poem contains a
rhetorical devices. Yeah, you can look up what rhetorical devices are. Basically, it means things that you do with words. That's a simplified definition of rhetoric. Figures of speech, that's really what we mean. Like the lamp of knowledge. Knowledge is not exactly a lamp, but it's a picture. You get a picture when you say the light of knowledge, the torchlight of knowledge. So that figure of speech gives you an understanding of what it is that's happening. Yeah.
You can see.
Hmm?
You can see the things.
Yeah, you get, gives you a
picture. See before.
Gives you a picture.
You get the light.
Yeah. These are where Krishna reversed himself. I said, I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from me. That's another rhetorical device, figure of speech. There's a Latin name for it. I've forgotten. Okay.
I want to ask, did you said about these verses, if there sambandha vidyan prayojana, is there such kind of connection between these verses?
I suppose you could do an analysis on the basis of Sambandha, Videha, and Prayojana. I haven't seen it done.
It's in my wife's notes. Someone
else
did it.
Huh? No, I see. She's got it. Okay.
Yeah. Abhideya is the, let's get the different one. And then because Prayojana said,
maybe there's some.
Because the nutrition of the chapter.
Anyway, could these analyses, I haven't done, maybe it's been done by some acharya. Okay. So we have these essential verses from Bhagavad Gita. Now, is this our break time? Is that what's happening? Short break today? Not long break? Short minutes.
fold the pillow as you had it.
Wait a second, yeah. Should be so kind. Okay, we're just about ready to start again.
So we're supposed to meet at 4:30 today. You know that?
5:30.
4:30 now. He's changed it.
He's changed it again.
Yeah.
Who changed it?
Bhakti Shri Maharaj.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay, shall we start?
We continue.
Okay, we're back in action.
Haribol, Haribol.
Haribol. No one believes. You don't need quarantine.
Quarantine.
You need only a bathroom.
Okay.
It's guaranteed.
Now Krishna has spoken these four essential verses, declaring himself the origin of everything and the person who enlightens his devotees and gives them the opportunity to go back to Godhead. Now Arjuna will speak. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashtitam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Dibhum. Ahus Pham Rishiya Sarve Devarshir Naradas Tata Asito Devalo Vyasa Swayam Chaiva Bravishya. So he says to Krishna, Param Brahma, you're the supreme Brahma. We hear about Brahma, or the absolute, or the living entity is declared as Brahma or spirit. But Krishna is Param Brahma. He's the supreme Brahma. Param Tam, the supreme abode, supreme residence of everything. And Pavitra Paraman, he is the supreme pure. Asnaviram Shudhamapapavidham. Krishna's 100% pure. He's not touched by the contamination of the modes of material nature. Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parasta. And Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. Earlier we read, what was that? Similar thing? Yeah.
100% pure.
No, there's a particular verse we read. What was that verse? Speaking about Krishna's...
He's unalloyed.
Is it...
Ah, here it is. Paramam Purusham Divyam Yati Paratana Chintaya. 8th chapter. Krishna says that you can attain the Paramam Purusham Divyam by being constantly engaged in thinking of me. You'll attain the Paramam Purusham Divyam, supreme personal, supreme Purusha, who is transcendental. Now here, similar words, Purusham Shashvatam Divya, the supreme, eternal, divine person. Shashvata means eternal, original. Nitya Shashvatoyam Purana. Purusha, person, supreme enjoyer. Divyam, transcendental. Adi Devam, the origin of all the demigods, or the original god, you can say that. Ajam, unborn, and Vibhum. Vibhu means the greatest. So he's glorifying Krishna this way. So then someone may say, yeah, because you're a devotee, now you're glorifying Krishna, you know, just like some girl always says about how her husband or her boyfriend is so great, or some, you know, guy will say his father is the best, or whatever. So someone may say that to Arjuna, that you're Krishna's friend, so you're speaking this hyperbolic glorification of Krishna. But now Arjuna upholds his statements. Ahus tvam rishaya sarve. All the rishis say this. Devarshi Narada, Narad Muni, Asita, Devala, these are great sages, and Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedic knowledge, and Swayam Chaiva, and you also are confirming the same thing. Not simply Arjuna's personal opinion. And this is the system of speaking, to uphold what one says by reference to authorities. So Arjuna, in this way, expresses the greatness of Krishna. And then he says, Sarvam etadritam manye yan mam vadasi keshavam. Prabhupada says, this is the example of how to accept Bhagavad Gita. After hearing from Krishna, Arjuna says, Sarvam etadritam manye, I accept all of what you've told me to be true. Whatever you've said, yan mam vadasi keshava, whatever you've told me, I accept completely. Not that I accept, well, 80% pretty good, another 10% a little doubtful, and another 10% out of the question. No, 100%. Arjun accepts sarvam, etad. I accept all of it. Not like the people who accept something and reject something. They're not the right people for understanding Bhagavad Gita or explaining Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is the standard example. He is the original student of Bhagavad Gita, and this is how he accepted. I completely accept everything you've told me. Yes?
I was going to ask a technical question. You know, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken on the battlefield between Krishna and Arjuna, and then Sanjaya, by some mystic, you know, he told it to Dhritarashtra. Who wrote it down and how? I mean, how is this conversation?
Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is including it in the Mahabharata.
So he was the spiritual master of Sanjay.
Mm.
So if he could give that power to Sanjay, he had it also.
Yeah. But he's relating it in this way.
Yeah, well, he's a potent, you know.
He can say everything. I personally saw he could say, but he's chosen this way. My disciple Sanjay was there in the palace, and he was speaking to Dhritarashtra in this way. Also, it has its place within the narrative of the Mahabharata. That it's significant when, you know, Sanjaya is telling Dhritarashtra, here's the score. So it has its place within the larger context of the Mahabharata.
Sanjaya was a devotee also.
Sanjaya is a disciple of Vyasadeva. Mm.
Perhaps the fact that he's a servant of Dhritarashtra makes him more credible, more impartial, but doesn't have vested interest in relating the facts in favor.
Of course, Vyasadeva is also known to be, you know, sages are not, you know, they're supposed to tell the truth. But Vyasadeva chooses to relate the incident as spoken by Sanjay. You know, say, well, I think for this reason, that reason, anyway, that's how he's chosen to do it. Nahite Bhagavan Vyaktim Vidura Deva Nadanava. Oh, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, no one can know you. The demons can't know you, the demigods can't know you. You're beyond the reach of the so-called scholars, and what to speak of the demons. Svayam eva atmanatmanam detatvam purushottama. Actually, only you can understand yourself. Purushottama, you are the supreme transcendental person. And svayam eva atmanatmanam, only you can know yourself. Who else is great enough to know how great you are? Bhuta bhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate. You're the origin of everything, you're the Lord of everything. And deva deva, people are worshipping the devas, but Krishna is the deva of the devas. He is the god of the gods. Deva deva. And jagatpati, he is the lord of the entire universe.
Prabhupada gives us an interesting interpretation.
Yes.
He gives us like why he gives us why he explains why Arjuna gives his sequence.
Yeah, he goes through that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone may not accept this, but then he may accept this, but he may not know this.
Yeah.
Krishna is telling more and more.
Yeah.
this verse quoted in the purport, Vedanti Tat Tattva Vidas, that's also a second edition exclusive. Any other questions?
Maharaj, I didn't understand the point. Vyasadeva, he also saw it.
Vyasadeva can see, he knows he's Trikalagya, he can see everything. But he, otherwise, how was Vyas, Sanjay was able to see it by the mercy of Vyas.
Yeah, I understand.
Vyasa prasadat shrutavan. At the end, he says, well, by the mercy of Vyas, I've been able to hear this conversation. If Sanjay could hear it by Vyas' mercy, then certainly Vyas would have been able to have known it also. But Vyas chose to narrate Sanjaya's narration.
Goes into
I mean, he also wasn't...
Yeah, that's what we said.
He also wasn't at each place where the Mahabharata took place, and he knows all these things by being Tree Kalakya, or... Is it like that?
Yeah.
You know.
How much Vyasadeva knows, we can't know.
He popped up just at opportune moments in that Mahabharata.
Yeah, he himself is in the narration. There's some... Jiva Goswami also in his Tattva Sandarbha, he talks about the other sages, like they carve something out from the sky of the mind of Vyas. You know, Vyas has such expansive knowledge. Others just get a little bit. Okay, now Arjuna's questions begin. Vaktum arhasya sheshena divya hi atma vibhutaya yabir vibhuti bir lokan imams tvam vyapya tishtasi. Vaktum arhasi asheshena, please tell me in detail, divya hi atma vibhutayaha, of your own transcendental opulences. Tell me about your vibhutis. We know that you've got these great, excellent qualities, vibhutis. Now please explain them in detail. Yabhi vibhutibhi lokan iman tvam vyapya tishtasi, by which you pervade all the worlds. It said God is everywhere. Now, how is it that God is everywhere? Prabhupada says people in general and the impersonalists in particular concern themselves mainly with the all-pervading nature of the Supreme. Yes. People in general and the impersonalists in particular are concerned with the all. How is it that God is everywhere? So now Krishna himself, Arjuna is asking Krishna how he exists in his all-pervading aspect through his different energies. That's the question. Katam vidyam aham yogims tvam sada parichintayam keshu keshu chabhaveshu chintyosi bhagavan maya. How can I know you and always think of you? Sada parichintayam. Pari means in all directions. Parichintayam, always. How can I think of you? Always. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyosi. How can I remember you? Keshu keshu, in what particular things can I remember you? And Prabhupada comments, keshu keshu cha bhaveshu means in the material world. Bhava means material things, physical things. So he's considering the way that people think in the material world, and he's asking Krishna to please explain how they can concentrate their mind on physical things and try to see how Krishna is manifested by physical representations. Okay?
He said, but he said among the qualities of a devotee is a kavi, a poet.
Yeah.
His slokas are Arjuna, like, so beautiful.
All of these slokas, they're very poetic. This is alliteration. We were talking about figures of speech. Bhuta bhavana bhutesha. Pa, pa, pa. Keshu, keshu, jabhaveshu. Yes.
Srila Prabhupada mentions that Arjuna was speaking because he was thinking of people in the future. So did he know that this conversation was taking place to educate people in the future or something?
Yeah, the whole thing is a setup by Krishna for the enlightenment not only of Arjuna, but for others also. So Arjuna is asking for the benefit of others. We can say that Krishna is inspiring to ask for the benefit of others. Okay. The common man who has no love for Krishna cannot always think of Krishna. Therefore, he has to think materially. So now we're going to talk about material things and make a connection to Krishna. That's what Arjuna wants to know. I'm always surrounded by material things, so how can I think of you even in relation to these material things? That's the question.
He's also asking him to show him his divine opulence.
Yes.
How is he in everything?
Yes. Yes, that's what he's... What are those opulences? The opulences are his particular manifestations, vibhuti. How are you particularly manifest? And we'll see how Krishna replies. Arjuna continues, Vistarena atmana yogam vibhutim cha janardana bhuya katya triptir here hi srinvato nasti memita. Vistar means broadly, extensively. Vistarena, atmana, yogam. Please explain or tell me in detail, tell me extensively about this mystic power by which you manifest these vibhutis, these opulences. Then he says, Puya katya triptir hir shindato. I never get tired of hearing these topics, because they're just nectar. They're just nectar. Here, amrita. And Prabhupada quotes a similar statement from the sages of Naimisharanya. Vayam tu na vitripyamaha uttama shloka vikrame yat srinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu kadekade. There's such a taste in hearing about Krishna. So Arjuna says, I'm never satisfied, I've never satiated. All right, I've heard enough about you. No, you never becomes hackneyed or stale or dull. I want to hear more. That's Arjuna's request. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Hanta te katiyishyami divya hyatma vibhutaya pradhanyata kuru shreshta nastyanto visturasyame. Yes, Hanta. Purushan Prabhu comments that Hanta is spoken with tenderness, affection. And Krishna says, yes, I'm very happy that you've asked this question. And I'll tell you about my transcendental opulences. But pradhanyata, only the main ones. Pradhan means principal, main. I'll tell you the main ones, because I can't tell you everything. Na asti anta visturasya. There's no limit to the extent of my opulences. So, you know, tell me in detail, tell me extensively. I'll just give you a little sample. Yes.
Actually, when Arjuna, he wants to hear more and more, it's like you cannot be satisfied with a Christian.
No.
I mean, it's like when compared to.
It's so nice that we don't never say, all right, now I've heard about Krishna, I'm satisfied. Enough. You become full and say, all right, you know, I can't eat anymore. No. This topics of Krishna go beyond such material limitations. So the sages say, and Arjuna says, no, we never get tired of hearing it. We want to hear more and more. Just we see even the public. Why the public? Yes, the public. They like to hear Mahabharata, Ramayana. They've heard it so many times before. Everyone's, you know, they've heard all the stories. But they take pleasure in hearing them again and again. Because it's transcendental katha. The devotees, we're hearing again and again. It doesn't become, oh yeah, I heard, oh, you're going to tell the story about Putana again, oh man. No, it's always relishable to hear. It's always fresh. That's the quality of Krishna, that he's ever fresh, one of Krishna's 64 qualities. So it's always relishable.
Mahaprabhu was an example of this.
Mahaprabhu, yeah. Relishing again and again, Krishna Katha, Krishna Katha. Especially those who've awakened their taste, they hear. Those whose taste is, you know, jaundiced. The jaundiced person doesn't like sugar because it tastes bitter. But the cure for jaundice is sugar. Mishri, sugar candy. So even if we don't have that taste, by regularly hearing, we'll be cured, and then it will taste very sweet. Svadhu, svadhu, pade, pade, at every step.
Is Arjuna in this conversation, is he viewing Krishna only as a spiritual master, or is he viewing Krishna as a supreme lord as well?
No, he's already said, I accept you as Param Brahma, Param Tam, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. So, not just that you're my spiritual master, but I accept you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the real thing.
But still he doesn't know.
And he doesn't deny it.
Huh?
But still he wants to know, you know, he realizes that Krishna is the Supreme of the Supreme, but still he doesn't know.
Why doesn't he know?
He's telling him, you know, please, you know.
No, I know, but tell me about...
He wants to hear.
You know, like... More. You know, you're the guy who climbed Mount Everest. Tell me about it. You know, what were the things that happened along the way, and what, you know, what were some of the adventurous things that, not that I don't know that you're the person who conquered Mount Everest. I know, but now I want to hear all the details, you know, what happened on the first day, what happened on the second day, you know, what happened, how did you feel, and what about that time when the oxygen bottle ran out, and, you know, not that I don't know, I know I want to hear more about it, I want to hear in detail. Huh? You know, just like some sports enthusiast, he hears that, you know, this person defeated that person. Yeah, all right, but, you know, what happened in the first round? What happened in the second round? And, you know, you want to hear all the details.
And then hear it again. After.
And then, you know, tell me again. And he did what? You know, and then, you know, really? He really did that? Yeah, he really did it, you know. And they'll go over it again and again and relish, even materially. So Arjuna knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he wants to hear the details, and specifically, how is it that I can think of you everywhere in the material world? How can I think of you in terms of material things? The material things with which we're surrounded. How can we think of you in terms of those things?
Maharaj, Maharaj, is Krishna speaking in the mood of a friend or more the Supreme Lord there?
No, he's this. He's speaking as Krishna. He is the friend of Arjuna, and he's the Supreme Person. He's not one or the other, he's both.
But his mood, I mean, according to, I mean, like in Goloka Vrindavan, his mood as a Supreme Lord is covered, so he can reciprocate with his devotees, you know, in different relationships.
Yeah, but here he's speaking as the Supreme Authority, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Face value, just take it as it is, it's not.
To be honest, later on, when he sees Arjuna perform, then Arjuna has his graces, like.
Yeah.
So at the same time, he's kind of still keeping his friendly mood and seeing Krishna as God, and then there he's.
Yeah, in the 11th chapter, Krishna will really pour it on. He'll really show Arjuna something impressive. That's going to be too much.
The widescreen.
But here it's just education. In the 11th chapter, it's demonstration. What's stated here in poetic language in the 10th chapter will be demonstrated graphically in the 11th. All right, so we'll begin Krishna's answer tomorrow. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Jai.
Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.
It's quite interesting here. He tells Arjuna, I'll tell you more knowledge that you haven't heard. You know? But then he tells something about himself, but then he stops. And then Arjuna asks him to further elaborate.
Yeah.
On,
you know, tells something, and then Arjuna says, well, all right, you told me something. Let's get into this topic.
You paid 40, huh? What are I going to do? Who are you to order? Who are you? You get 10 bags. Yeah? And you're sure you get, like, you get me 60 rupees? Yeah, you don't remember?
No, no, what is it?
Just listen.
50 and 10.
No?
Yeah, you gave me 100 and you gave me the change.
Can you get it back to me? You didn't have the. When you can remember. You say, I believe you, when you can remember.
Yeah.
If you say, no, I believe you.
Oh, where is that boy?
You have 10?
Yeah.
Ahari Bhakti Vilas, you have 10 rupees? You gave me 40, huh?
Yeah.
I gave you already. See, I'm not the best in money.
You forgot already, just
yeah.
Remind me if I ever try to employ you.
2 hours actually.
You think I'm going to be a worker for you or what?
Arvon?
Well, not in the financial sector.
The rich sector.
No, not the rich sector.
Is the witch this sect?
So how did you go yesterday?
Thank you.
You're okay.
Well, the room,
you know. Where'd Maharaj go?